Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kerry Stevenson. Today, I'm speaking with Shannon Green. He is the Executive Chairman and CEO of Resource Base. The ASX code is RBX. Now, when I spoke to Shannon back in March, it was in advance of the results coming out for their Mitre Hill project. And today, I've asked Shannon to come back because the results are in. It's really exciting time for Resource Base, and it is great to see you again, Shannon. Thanks for joining me on Small Caps today.
Look, thank you for having me, Kerry. It's fantastic to be here, and it really is a great day for Resource Base.
Well, let's talk about it because, as I said in the introduction, when we last spoke, the results weren't out. Now, Mitre Hill, give us a quick overview of where it is, how big it is, and what you've been doing before we get into the results and what that means.
Certainly. So the original Mitre Hill transaction was five tenements. So we bought the company, the Mitre Hill company, that had five tenements, one very large tenement in South Australia and four in Victoria up near the border. So we're out in the west in Victoria, in what we call the Lower Murray Basin. Since then, we've advanced our geological model. And we have pegged another 13 tenements that are all under application. And we're looking at further tenement pegging as well, moving forward, as we really start to calibrate our geological model and get a better sense. And now with some proven results to prove that, we're on the right track.
You said one in South Australia, four in Victoria. Do they meet in the middle or is it...
They kind of meet at the border. Not necessarily all continuity, but certainly a lot of the tenements are close to each other, and some of the tenements, especially in Victoria, are contiguous to each other. And we've been very successful in pegging more ground and filling in some of the jigsaw puzzle of further ground as well. So we're building a very large. We've got 2,600 square kilometre. Land package out there in the west, which is a significant package of an area that is proving to be quite a widespread, broad clay, rare earth, mineralised zone.
I think that's the interesting part, which I wanted to unpack a little bit, because there's plenty of naysayers out there, Shannon, that said, you're not going to find rare earth elements out in that neck of the woods. Why are you even bothering? What was it that drew you to this area? Because you've had, decades of experience in exploration and mining. I think you worked with WMC for almost a decade. So you understand this area, but what was it about picking up this land holding when everyone else said, there's nothing there? It's moose pasture. And you went, eh.
Yeah. Look, we, obviously the original Mitre Hill tenements had been pegged because they were surrounding and contiguous to AR3. AR3 have a 40 million tonne, 700 ppm clay, rare earth, draw compliant resource, and they're building on that resource. They're currently trial mining in the trial pit and things like that out in that area. So that was happening. So the initial part of it was, we really felt that mineralisation would be more contiguous than some of the historical modelling had shown. And there was some regional data from old water bores and things like that. Unfortunately, this was sort of really been mineral sands country for many decades. Oh. And so there wasn't really, a lot of the drilling hadn't been sampled for any of the rare earth elements. So, rare earths is a much more modern, a mineral in the sense of, being really hunted for. And it's really been the onset of decarbonisation, batteries and so forth. So there's some key minerals within rare earths called the NdPr suite, which are the magnets in the EVs and so forth. So it's become a critical element globally. Historically, about 80% of the clay rare earths is locked up in China. So China control a significant piece of the market. And now governments, the US, Europe, Australia, are designating it critical, and countries are trying to secure it. And very recently, as in the last couple of weeks, the US, for example, have now classified internal production as being, you know, UK and Australia as well. So they will fund on those continents, they will fund the development of rare earth projects. And the clays are being more pursued than the hard rocks. There's a few reasons. Well, historically, the significant portion of the production has been clay rare earths out of China. So it's a known entity, but it's shallow. It's cheaper, far cheaper to access. It's cheap, generally considered to be cheaper to process, and generally a bit less complex in the processing. But those differences result in fairly significant reductions in capital costs for processing plants and so forth. So
there's two different types, Shannon. There's the hard rock, which obviously you're going to have to do a lot more processing with, like drill, blast, crush, etc. Then you've got the clay, which I assume is closer to the surface and more of a quarry process.
You're literally stripping off a few metres of overburden, taking out a couple of metres of mineralisation, and you could literally reform the land back with the overburden in a very, you know, a very simplistic process. Whereas the hard rocks, obviously, a lot deeper. So you're talking about a full open cut mining development and all of the associated costs and significantly more costs in processing. I mean, if you look at some of the proposed projects in the hard rock rare earth space, you're talking about $1 billion processing plants. Wow. You know, in the clays, you know, you're certainly talking at the other end of the, you know, 100 million, you know, mid 100 million mark. So just totally game changing, particularly for junior and mid cap companies to actually bring these projects through to fruition. You know, bringing a $1 billion project through for a junior is not, you know, it's not likely.
Well, it's when the big boys come in and take it up. But to be clear, can you ever have clay and hard rock rare earths in the same area? Does that happen, or are they always separate?
Generally not, because it's different geological formations of the mineralization. Right. Totally different settings.
I really like just giving an overview, because I think that's really important. And how interesting that you said 2 weeks ago the US is saying we're going to support the UK and Australia and potentially in funding as well. So you're certainly in the right spot. Let's 100%. Go into Mitre Hill, because your results are out. What I want to know is, before we start into the results, you've recently purchased your own drill rig, meaning that you can drill as and when you want, and you're not relying on a third party. Give me the strategy behind that and why this is important.
Sure. Look, I mean, the contract drilling space is pretty tough space. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to secure rigs. It's virtually impossible to secure a rig in your schedule. It will always be the contractor's schedule. It's just how the nature of it is. And the costs have really skyrocketed because it's hard to get. So prices, you know, supply and demand. So we were battling away, you know, getting a rig for a week here and there and so forth. And we really started to internalize. So this is just not going to work for us. This is a huge scale footprint. We've got multi-years of drilling ahead of us out there. You know, there's got to be a better way. So we did a bit of soul searching and so let's go and hunt for a rig. So, you know, we were just really lucky. The timing, you know, confluence of timing and the decision making came together very quickly. We identified a rig that was in spectacular condition. It was owned by a drilling contractor, and he was reducing his fleet. And, you know, look, the rest is history. The rig was located in northern Tasmania. You know, from 2 weeks of identifying the rig, we had it, you know, up at Horsham and in a workshop getting the work done. We've just had a certifier go over the rig. few points being currently addressed right now to make sure that the rig is absolutely shipshape and in the most current top, you know, health and safety requirements and so forth. So that's happening right now. But, you know, the base rig, you know, costs us $100,000 to buy the rig and transport it up to the project area. Portion. So, you know, in anyone's language, you know, that is just, you know, a very, very prudent use of our funds. And, you know, when we talk about how much drilling we've got ahead of us over a number of years, and we're talking about 50-odd percent reduction in the cost of our drilling, you know, the returns 50%. To our shareholders, the returns to our shareholders will be significant in the coming years. And in fact, if you know, things go according to Hoyle, we'll probably be looking at trying to, you know, purchase another rig of similar, you know, similar style, and have two rigs running. We've got most of the team employed, engaged. They're currently establishing the health and safety systems and so forth that we need to operate under.
You've got the people. I mean, it's all well and good to have a rig, but you've got the people to operate it as well.
Correct. Perfect. That's right. We've got a drill trainer. We're full steam ahead, and that rig will be out in the next couple of weeks, starting the infill drilling.
Right. Well, let's talk about drilling. Let's talk about your initial drilling at Mitre Hill. What's it shown, apart from to the naysayers out there? Yeah, he's got rare earth elements, which we'll fondly name them as RE going forward. So rare earth elements, you've been drilling. What's it shown you?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's shown us that our geological model was actually, you know, spot on. So we've identified widespread reoccurrence, largely as we had anticipated and largely as our model had said, you know, sort of 3 meters, 3 to 4 meters of cover, 1 to 2 meters of thickness in the area where we have drilled. And we've seen that across the drilling from neighbours, that, you know, you will see widths from 1 to, you know, sort of 4 meters, you know, 5 in, you know, in absolutely, you know, perfect sort of areas. Because, you know, obviously the basement is undulating. And, you know, we've drilled on a pretty broad space pattern. And we'd anticipate to see, even in between as we start the infill drill, we'll see some more thickness moving forward. Certainly, in regards to the mineralisation itself, some of the highest intersects around the 1400-1500 ppm.
What does that mean? What does that mean, Chad? And for all of us out here that go 1400-1500 ppm, is that good, bad? No idea.
Yeah, for sure. Look, what that means is that in total contained rare earth elements, that's the makeup. Of that, then there's quite a high percentage. We've been very lucky. We're seeing a very high percentage of that, you know, sort of the 300 to 400 ppm range. We're seeing of what we call the NDPRs, so the most highest value of the rare earth elements that go into the magnets. So we're seeing a really high proportion of the NDPR. So that's a fantastic tick. What that means is that, you know, if you're talking 1500, you are talking very economic material, particularly when you're talking that's only three odd meters below surface in, you know, flat plains, very, you know, it's very cost effective to access. So we're using, at the moment, we're using a sort of a bottom cutoff of about 500 ppm. So we're suggesting that anything above that 500 ppm would form an economic envelope in a larger JORC compliant mineralized resource as we do more and more drilling and start to, you know, establish a resource out there.
When you say, you said at the start there that it's fairly wide space drilling, I'd like, give us a visual if you like of how big this area is, because you've got, I think, the second largest land holding in the area. Out of all of that you've got, are we looking at just 1% in a little corner spaced at, you know, 100 metres? Give us a visualisation of what you've been doing.
Sure. So the tenement we drilled is 28 square kilometres.
Okay.
We drilled along roadsides and road reserves because that's where we could immediately access under all of the drilling approvals while we were still negotiating land access agreements and so forth, which majority of those are in place on that particular tenement now, which is why we can go back in and now infill. The hole spacings were about half a kilometre apart. It's a quite broad brushed just to get a sense, are we seeing what we believed that our geological hypotheses and our geological model were suggesting we should see? And, you know, that's a big tick. The lab says, yes, we've seen exactly what we expected to see, which is just fantastic. 28 square kilometres of 2,600 square kilometres.
Oh, wow. It's a pimple in the bottom, right?
It is. And, look, we had a ratio of 70-odd percent of our drill holes, 36 holes, 70% of those have hit economic mineralisation, or what we would determine to be economic mineralisation. So, you know, I think from an exploration perspective, you know, to get a 70% strike rate is extremely good.
Yeah, and the other 30%, were they showing anything, or were they?
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly mineralisation, but, you know, at this stage we're saying that would fall below, you know, that cutoff. But, you know, those sort of things, as the resource grows, then you would start to, you know, bring in, and as you start to do studies and so forth, you start to establish those parameters for economic cutoffs and so forth, and they may shift a little bit. But at the moment we've been fairly conservative and saying, you know, 500.
You have done everything that you have said that you were going to do with this particular project. Your quarterly's come out. It's very good. You're funded. What I'd like to know is, what are the next steps? I guess, what is it that you think is going to be good for shareholders over the coming months?
Well, I mean, today is obviously really good for our shareholders, because today we can say with surety from the lab, we're proving our geological model. And to the naysayers, you know, the proof's in the pudding on the lab results. And, you know, this is very early days on a much bigger, you know, much bigger land holding position here.
Where do you go from having done just that 28 square kilometres in what you just told me was 2,600 square kilometres? How do you make a decision, Shannon? How do you make a decision to go, all right, well, we're going to go over here next? Because I know from speaking to you in the past, you are very prudent with shareholder funds.
Oh, 100%, which is why we went with buying a drill rig. It was a very prudent capital expenditure. We've also bought our own infield XRF machine. They're $6,000 a month to hire. They're $50,000 to buy. What that means we can do in the field in real time, we can be calibrating the drilling. If we're not seeing what we should be seeing based on real results from an XRF machine, we can move the rig and do those types of things. What it also enables us to do, and, you know, again, from a prudent cost perspective, it enables us to really narrow down what we're sending to the laboratories. So we'll be significantly reducing volume of samples going to the laboratory. One, that reduces our logistic costs.
Yep.
Two, that reduces our direct laboratory costs. And three, it speeds up time, because rather than sending 1,000 samples to the lab, you know, we might have sent, you know, 250 samples to the lab. So, you know, all of a sudden we've given ourselves these significant cost reductions moving forward. And when you think about it, you know, this is going to be a very large scale pattern drilling, you know, program where we're just going to be moving grid by grid across tenements. You know, these costs become quite significant. So every reduction that we can have is magnified, you know, by you know, 2 to 3 year drilling program. But how do we determine it? There's a number of things, I guess, and some of the decisions are not always in your sphere of control. There are things like, what order do the tenements grant in?
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got that part to play. Then it's, you know, what challenges are there around land access? You know, and there are different challenges on different tenements around land accesses. So you've got to work through all your land access agreements and compensations and those types of things. That takes a bit of time to move through. Then we also have the geological model. So you have a geological model that says X marks the spot. That's the best spot where you'd really love to drill. And if we can, we will. But then we've got to take all of these other points into account, which is exactly where we were with this initial drilling program. It was the first tenement to grant. It was the first tenement that we had negotiated access agreements for, et cetera. So that was the spot to start drilling. But our model also said we should be seeing mineralisation there. So it's just been a fantastic outcome. But again, you know, part of this is part of the reasoning behind buying our own drill rig and really being in control of our own destiny. One of the challenges is there's a lot of farmland out there. So a lot of land access to farmers, and building those relationships takes time, and we're very passionate about doing that. And we spend a lot of time out there on the ground building those relationships, building trust in the communities, telling people what we'll do, doing exactly what we said we'll do, and then seeking feedback on that. And that's how we've been approaching it out there. And one of the challenges, of course, is that on farmland, that there are certain works happening at certain times, and there are certain periods when you can go and drill on the land. There are certain periods when you can't. And some of those windows can be quite tight. So if you can't schedule with absolute certainty, you may start missing a whole lot of drill windows. Contractor turns up on the wrong day, and now you've got an upset landowner and things like that.
Yeah.
We're absolutely in control. This is our drill, our crew. They know how they have to work. They understand the culture of our company, how we behave on people's property and so forth. And if we say, or if a farmer says you can be here from this day to this day, well, that's what we will do. So we're completely in control of running our business.
And do you know what, Shannon, the other thing that does, this is the thing I've spoken about in the past, mining and farming, working together and having that trust and building that relationship is important. So congratulations on having, as I say, being in charge of your own destiny, but also being able to help the farmers with their timetable as well, working together. We are running out of time, my friend.
Brilliant.
I need to know, for my beautiful community out there, what you think the three reasons are for shareholders, well, I guess our community, to sit up and really take notice of Resource Base, as I talked to you today, with those drill results coming out. Goodbye, naysayers. The rare earth elements are there. What are the catalysts for change as you go forward?
You've just said it. We've now, shown the naysayers we have widespread mineralisation of rare earths on our ground. And given we've drilled up to tenement boundaries and we've got contiguous tenements and so forth, we know that's going to continue through other tenements. So, that question has now been answered, and, the naysayers can be silenced on that particular point. We've got our own drill rig, so we're completely in control of our own destiny and how we manage our business here and how we manage our costs, which is very important to us. We do hold ourselves to a very high standard in terms of how we manage our shareholders' money, and we like to ensure that, we get as,
bang
for the buck that we possibly can. And, these initial results in this first area really prove our geological model and our hypotheses of our geological team, correct, and certainly more right than some others have suggested. And I'm really proud of that. We took the risk of pegging more ground. We took the risk of buying the drill rig and so forth. We were very, firm in our beliefs. And now we've got some laboratory results that really back that up and prove that, running at the speed we've run at is going to pay significant dividends for our shareholders. We're a first and fast mover out there in that sense.
Shannon Green, always good to talk to you. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, they have got the second largest land holding in the district. It's not a project, it's more of a district, just getting started. But as Shannon just said, the drill results are back. It's telling him that his hypothesis was clear, and they will continue to be drilling in the area. So keep up to date by going to the Resource Base website. ASX code is RBX. Shannon Greens, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Kerry. It's been a pleasure.